Effendi, who was like a living Imam Hussein. Once we were together with Muzaffar Effendi, and we went to a big dinner party. It was in Istanbul, a very splendid affair. It was outside, and I think I don't know if it was for him. In those days, I was a very new dervish, and I just we stuck as close as we could to Effendi, and we didn't really understand or take in the context much, but it was quite seemingly festive and kind of glamorous. And at some point, Effendi just got up. I don't even know, I think it could have been even for him, I'm not sure. He just got up and left with all these people around, you know. And it was such a demonstration of, you know, the truth. No, I mean, something was said or something was done that was not of the heart, of the human heart, and went against the deep adab of love and courtesy. And so he just got up and left. And of course, as he got up and left, all his dervishes just got up and left, walked out of that party, you know. So that was quite strong, a very strong statement. And another time, in a similar fashion, he would say, you know, you meet, he was such a tender person. He could be tender like a baby. He was like a baby, you know, when he was in love. But he could be quite fierce in the face of arrogance. And he would say, you meet arrogance with arrogance. But it sort of takes a master to do that. Otherwise, one can trip up on that. So that's why it says the dervishes are like, they follow the way of Hazrat Isa. We follow the way of Jesus. We turn the other cheek. We take, we take the blows. We take the humiliation and anything that comes our way. With humbleness and patience. And then, inshallah, that helps to refine us. And without complaint, you know, we try not to complain too much. It's hard not to complain a little bit. But then if we complain to Allah. That's the one, that's the place where our complaint is safe. So he said that, you know, once he was, this I didn't observe directly, but it's a story he told to demonstrate, to exemplify that teaching, that he went into a restaurant. And again, it was probably a kind of snobby restaurant, you know. And it was in Turkey. And he goes in, and of course, people in Turkey drink. I mean, you know, and particularly probably among a certain upper class or wealthy. They drink, everybody, a lot of people drink. But now, you know, no surprise, humanity gets drunk because we want to find love. We want to find the heart. It's not the best way, but, you know, the best way is zikr. And the best, really, the best way is zikr. So he goes in there, and this sort of snobby maitre d' comes and asks him, what will he drink? And Effendi says, you know, I don't drink. And so the waiter apparently just, of course, then knowing this man is a Muslim, it's a Muslim country, but, you know, he lives like a Muslim. And it was, somehow, it was such a stigma in this kind of fancy restaurant that Effendi did not drink. And that, you know, he made some gesture. So he did something, and Effendi just took the glass and just threw it on the ground, you know, like that. Just, you know.
Broke it?
Yeah, absolutely. He broke it. He smashed it. So, smashed the idol of snobbery, you know, that would look down on someone. So, and it wasn't, of course, for his own sake. And he could completely disappear. He could become almost invisible in his humbleness, but he could hide. It was very amazing. He had a capacity to be under a cloak of invisibility. But then when the cloak came off, he was like, you know, the sun itself. And glorious. He had definitely a glorious, glorious being, radiance. So, and one time, again, on travel with him, and I'm trying to remember where we were. Maybe in Egypt, was it after the Hajj in 1980? And he went to see a dervish of his who was extremely poor. And he reminded me of Ayub Sultan. You know, Ayub was living in Medina, and he was, they say, the descendant of a king, but many generations down. And the king, it said, had heard about the prophet to come and had fallen in love with him. This was 400 years before, and had sent one of his descendants to Medina, where he was supposed to arrive eventually, this prophet, and to have descendants there, so that when the prophet would arrive, they could greet him. And so Ayub Sultan was the descendant, impoverished descendant, of this king 400 years earlier, whose family line was now living in Medina. But and that's where the prophet's camel, when the prophet came to Medina, everyone wanted him to stay in their house. He had no house of his own. And he was guided to say, "My camel." It was a very beloved camel of his. And he said, "My camel, will, Kiswa, I think her name was, will decide where I go, where I spend the first part of my time here until a place is built." And the camel went around here and there. And finally, it went to the door of Ayub and knelt down. And that's, so that's where he stayed, in Ayub's house, for the first, I don't know whether it weeks or something, he lived with Ayub. So Ayub Sultan later became one of the ones who went to Istanbul as an elder man, very old, to fight, to, you know, fighting, I don't know, was part of the way. And he died outside of the walls of Istanbul. And when Istanbul was taken by Fatih and his sheikh, Akşemseddin, it was Akşemseddin himself who received an inspiration where Ayub's body was outside the walls of Istanbul. And he found him, they brought him into the city, and now he has a beautiful, you know, shrine. I mean, I think Sultan Fatih built a shrine for him. And as one of the revered companions of the Prophet. And it's a very, very special place, the place, and thousands of pilgrims go there in the city. Where does this bring us? This brings us back to Effendi in Egypt, visiting this dervish of his, who, as I said, reminded me of Ayub Sultan. He was so poor. I mean, the house, I had never seen a house like that. I grew up, you know, middle-class America, and I had never seen a house so simple and humble. And Effendi went, and we went, and there was no place to sit. There was just the bed of Ayub and his wife. It was a tiny little bed. It was an earth floor. You know, Ayub sat on the floor and offered Effendi the bed. Effendi sat on the bed, and we sat next to him. And I was so deeply touched. And Effendi totally took on, you know, he honored this man so beautifully and was completely at home there, completely at home. Effendi, if the circumstances were right, could be at home anywhere if the circumstances were loving. And as I said, he could manifest total humbleness, just like the earth, just like dirt. When it says we, you know, to be the dirt, the earth underneath the feet of the lovers, it's not just a metaphor. It's really something true, and yet he could be a regal sultan. We would also take him to the Plaza Hotel. He took a liking to the Oak Room in those days in the Plaza Hotel. We'd go have tea there and with his dervishes. And it was like And that was probably reminiscent of something very Ottoman. And it's the only time he would wear his turban, his crown, with his royal robes, the shiny, shiny robes, and the cloak, and we'd walk into them. And I'm sure they thought he was like some, you know, oil sheikh or something from Bahrain or Saudi. I'm sure they had no idea that he was a sultan of love. But somehow the atmosphere was love, and he transformed that oak room into a dergah. It became a dergah. Until the day, and this was after, you know, many, many times of tea there and beautiful afternoons. And until the day he noticed that the rug had the name Allah on it. And then he looked and he saw the Allah. And then he realized that that rug was a rug that had probably been taken from a masjid somewhere, some big mosque. And at that moment, I've never seen him walk like that. He all of a sudden became, again, a state of total reverence, and he tiptoed literally out, because of course we walked in there with our shoes, you know, it was just like a norm, but he tiptoed out so carefully not to walk on any of the divine names of Allah that were, you know, embroidered in the rug, so woven into the rug. So, you know, how amazing, what teaching flowed from him. So, you know, in our Western culture, we can be quite crass with holy things. You know, we don't hold much sacred. And I've asked people, the circle guides, in the beginning of this month of Muharram, to really contemplate the sacred, and what is sacred. And obviously, everything is sacred. I think Allen Ginsberg said, and all, you know, from his discipleship in the traditions in India, you know, all is holy, which is true. But to come to that level, to really see all is holy, you know, to be the place where you're a Ramakrishna feeding a cat the milk that should go to the Divine Mother because he saw the Divine Mother in the cat, you know, we need to distinguish, and we need to treat certain things as holy, and need to develop that and feel that in our heart. And what is sacred? What needs to... And sacred is the haram. That's the muharram. This is the month of haram. To become aware of the sacred and what is... so that... There are many things we need to learn, you know, from our great Western culture, which is so great, and Effendi loved it, but we have a lot to learn. And so that's one of them, how to revere things. You know, to revere things is almost sacrosanct in this culture. If you revere something, it's like stupid or like, you know, you're old-fashioned. Or, but we, inshallah, once again, we come to revere. And of course, what is most reverential is, you know, not the book of Allah, just which is already reverential, and that you shouldn't put on the ground, that you should raise the Quran or any holy text, you know, it said heart level and above, but it's the human being. That's the living place that we can learn again to revere each other and to regard and hold in awe, you know, the human being. And ourself begins with ourself. Can we revere ourself? Can we live and treat ourself as a holy being, not in a selfish way, but in a way of truth, and, you know, so much to learn. Alhamdulillah.